The Further Trials and Tribulations of Antonin Grenlittle. "We are really good at this," purred a naked Elizabeth. She curled up in a spoon-like fashion against her husband. "We really are. I think we could win a contest." Lupin laughed at this and tucked a stray tendril of hair around her ear, and Elizabeth rolled over and pressed her lips against his own. She felt flushed and playful, heavy with happiness.
"Where shall we go for the honeymoon?"
"Doesn't matter," he replied lazily, "so long as I have you entirely to myself. No one else may speak to you, or go near you, or even look at you."
Elizabeth's dark indigo eyes, with their ink-colored outer ring and dilated pupils, looked back at him with a fierce sort of sweetness, and Lupin felt his heart crumble beneath her gaze.
"Kiss me again," he muttered.
"I could kiss you forever."
She tilted her head toward his and sighed with bliss. Crack! Antonin Grenlittle appeared on the floor in front of the bed, on hands and knees, keening and sobbing as he swayed back and forth, and Lupin and Elizabeth looked at one another and broke out laughing.
"Shit," Lupin said cheerfully. "This is your worst apparition ever."
"Don't move," he warned Elizabeth as she sat up, effectively blocking Tony's view of his groin.
"Oh, for heaven's sake, Tony," she chortled as she snatched up her dressing gown. "Whatever is wrong with you now?"
Tony convulsed on the floor and tried unsuccessfully to speak.
"He didn't mean to come here,"
Lupin reassured Elizabeth kindly.
"Really, he would never be that rude. It's just that he can't fucking apparate properly."
Both of them fell into paroxysms of laughter again.
"He'll show up in Quebec and it's last Tuesday," Lupin continued gleefully. "Or in a snake pit in Peru or on a Broadway stage in New York City. My favorite was the top of St. Nicholas Cathedral in Prague at midnight,"
he mused.
"That was excellent. The muggle law persons were shooting their weapons at him, and he was screaming about this new beribbon top hat and how he couldn't possibly die before he'd had the opportunity to wear it."
"Why must you bring that up?" Tony screeched piteously. "You have not the slightest idea what's occurred to me. I tell you, I cannot bear it."
"Well, who showed up at midnight to get your ass down?"
Lupin replied irately and turned to Elizabeth for a sympathetic response.
"You have no idea how many places I've rescued him from."
"Yes, you are always rescuing him,"
Elizabeth agreed.
"You should think about that, Tony. Look how Remus saved you from that duel with Helibut and all those giant creatures, and that was just in 1 week. You ought to be thinking of him instead of carrying on like that,"
she declared in her best bossy big sister voice. Tony sat up and let out a scream that sounded like all of the dead and dying throughout history.
"God in heaven! Why are you so cruel and heartless to me?"
he howled and tore at his clothing.
"You know naught of the speechless agonies of my soul. Even now it is being rendered asunder and thrust into the foul pit. No, you care nothing for me, Elizabeth. You think only of your lover. And this...
He swept his arm in an obvious gesture meant to indicate the meaning of the wrinkled sheets on the floor, a knocked-over bedside lantern, and the mattress which hung 4 feet from the bed frame.
"This orgy of intercourse in which you have been engaged! Yes, it is obvious to me what you've been doing, while I am utterly and eternally ruined and damned to hell!
He stopped speaking, since he had gotten no further than orgy of intercourse before his listeners exploded into fits of mirth.
"Damn, I don't want to leave,"
Lupin told Elizabeth apologetically when he could speak.
"It's 9:30 and Kingsley told Scotland Yard I'd be there before 10.
"Why must you go?" she said petulantly. "It's awfully late. Can't they sort out their own business?"
"Well," Lupin said soothingly, "even though it was a muggle who was murdered, it was obviously done by a vampire, so that makes it my remit."
He shrugged and narrowed his eyes at Tony.
"And stop trying to look at my dick."
"I was not!"
Tony guiltily averted his eyes to the floor, just as the meaning of the previous sentence hit him like a hammer.
"You will be the one seeking out this killer vampire?"
he screamed in a panicked voice. Lupin gave him an odd look.
"I think I can handle one vampire, Tony. Don't worry yourself. Close your eyes, will you?"
Tony did so, although he sobbed hysterically as Lupin got up and went to his wardrobe.
"You can tag along if you'd like. It's actually near our old place on Folgate Street,"
he offered up generously from behind the door.
"Just for the investigation bit, you know. That'll cheer you right up."
Tony had begged for years to witness the melodrama of a crowd at a violent crime scene.
No, thank you. I do not believe that I shall. No.
He wiped a clammy hand across his sweating brow.
Perhaps the smuggle murder was done in self-defense?
The killer had a wand in his hand, Lupin replied in a disgusted voice. Half a dozen witnesses saw him carrying it. He could have stunned this fellow, or stupefied him, or done anything besides rip his head half off and then leave the body in the street for his mother to find. Throw a damn blanket over it or something, you know?
Elizabeth let out a gasp of horror.
Oh, that poor woman, how ghastly for her! Oh, I'm glad you're the one going after him now, because he won't have a chance of getting away with it.
I'll hunt that fucker down in an hour,
Lupin said with satisfaction as he sat and laced up his boots.
Apparently, he left evidence everywhere.
Tony's face contorted with misery.
Well, this person may not have thought of stunning him. Perhaps he cannot do those sorts of things well. And, well, you know, how can a muggle identify an actual wand?
He said triumphantly.
They've only seen pictures of them in those ridiculous films in which I was not included. How would they know what a real wand actually looked?
He dropped it in the street.
Elizabeth burst out laughing again, and Lupin cocked his head and frowned as the sound of Annie's plaintive cries echoed down the hallway.
You have frightened the baby,
he hissed as he strode past Tony.
Do not flash your eyes at me, Tony called after him. I will not be intimidated. You know very well I...
That is quite enough of this nonsense,
Elizabeth interrupted in an exasperated tone.
Now wipe off your face and blow your nose and summon yourself some wine.
Tony obeyed these instructions meekly, and Elizabeth, who knew how distractible he was, put on an encouraging smile.
Do you know what I was thinking today? I haven't heard nearly enough about your childhood. You know how interested I am in history.
Tony polished off his glass of wine, refilled it, and brightened visibly.
Well, if you insist, darling. As you know, my father was the High Lord Baron of the Sussex Weald, he began in an imperious fashion. I was the seventh child and only son, whose birth had been anxiously awaited for years. Why, when I was born, I was swathed in the finest of silks, and placed tenderly within satin-lined, silk-covered cot, as days of pageants and feasting and revels began.
A single, artfully contrived tear trickled down his left cheek.
Now, I grew to be a stout young lad, brimming with merriment and youthful vigor, my cheeks as rosy as the reddest of apples, with a veritable fountain of shimmering auburn curls tumbling down my back. How my sisters delighted in the wealth of my charms! I was so utterly winsome, they declared, so astonishingly clever, so heart-stoppingly beautiful. I do believe I was the happiest child on earth.
It does sound as if you had a wonderful childhood,
Elizabeth said truthfully. Lupin stepped back into the room holding a sniffling Annie, who was gripping his sleeve tightly in her tiny fist, her lower lip trembling.
Look there, darling, it's only Tony, the wretchedly dramatic vampire,
her father informed her soothingly.
And see, there's Mummy on the bed.
Be-woo-da!
Annie informed Tony reprovingly.
I'm telling a story, darling, he responded dismissively. Good little girls, do not interrupt.
Lupin glanced at Tony's wine glass, now on its third refill, and made an impatient noise.
He knows he can't drink wine,
he told Elizabeth in an exasperated voice.
He's rude as hell when he drinks wine. What's wrong with you tonight?
He demanded as he turned his attention on Tony.
You haven't done this since the First War.
Please do not interrupt, he called out loudly. Now, I was regaling Elizabeth with the fascinating tale of my childhood. You may listen as well, if you can manage to do so without speaking out of turn.
Lupin looked about as impressed by this as he had when Malodora Grimm announced her bird could sing.
What? First all the bawling, and now we've got to hear that bloody shite.
Yes, yes, you shall hear it all, I tell you. And you and that...
Tony pointed a shaking finger towards Annie.
That spoilt, sniveling little infant will keep yourselves quiet.
Don't you dare speak about my daughter like that, you cowardly cock-sucking little fuck.
Lupin spat back.
Remus, Elizabeth yelled. Honestly, Annie is listening.
She doesn't know what I'm saying. Fuck!
Annie chirped delightedly.
Fuck.
Shh, Lupin whispered. If I may continue, Now, let me see. Oh, I do recall especially well my 12th birthday. That was a most marvelous day.
He put a hand on one hip and began a routine that was already familiar to Elizabeth, striding 10 feet to the left before wheeling about to strut the distance back, with an occasional pause to perform an exaggerated theatrical gesture.
I sat upon a child-sized stone throne, well padded with intricately embroidered velveteen pillows, as crowds of well-wishers laid gifts at my feet and sang my praises, he trilled. How lustily the sun shone, brighter than it ever had before, upon the verdant green grass encircling my place of honor.
Fenwick called this bit the Cunty Bore's mincing monologue strut,
Lupin interjected rudely.
Now you're teaching her Scottish swear words,
Elizabeth wailed, but Tony ignored the comment entirely.
That very same day, my father was preparing a journey to London to pay homage to the king. Oh my, it was most exciting. He gathered together 200 strong men in the finest of livery, simply enormous men who rode upon bronzed thestrals with gilded leather saddles, as 100 trained falcons circled over their heads. 75 pack mules brought up the rear, laden with gifts for the king, driven by apparelled monkeys. My father's robes were made of the finest fur, with skeins of gold and silver threads into...
Who paid for this shit?
Lupin demanded. Well, the peasants, of course, Tony sneered. And the merchant class, you know, such as the shipbuilders of Rye.
Tony,
Elizabeth said in a warning voice.
But the fault was not mine, Tony responded airily. After a time, I became faint upon my little stone throne, and my sisters carried me gently to a plump red sofa within the glade. There I reclined the rest of the day beneath a violet canopy spangled with silver crescents, drinking spiced chocolate from a goblet of pure gold.
You were 12 years old, and your sisters carried you about,
Lupin said in a revolted voice. But Elizabeth clapped her hands enthusiastically and practically bounced upon the bed.
Richard the Third, she yelled excitedly. He was being king then. Did you see him?
She's impressed with this asshole,
Lupin muttered to Annie. Can you believe that?
Seabow,
Annie whispered and patted her father's arm.
Well, thank you.
No, darling, I fear that I did not. Tony cried out relentlessly. It was an ill wind that blew the day my poor father reached London. How mercilessly the cruel fates intervened. No sooner had he crossed the bridge than word arrived of an uprising in Wales, and in a moment's time he and his men made haste to fight for their king in Bosworth Field.
He paused, closed his eyes, and brought his hands slowly together into a prayerful pose.
There he met his ghastly, tragic, and untimely demise, he finished in a desolate voice.
Your father fought in a battle, Lupin commented. Does this mean he could actually lift a sword?
Well, of course he could, you despicable be-
Tony glanced at Elizabeth and broke off quickly.
Being? I'm only speaking in jest, Remus, my love. Now, after my father's death, his younger brother inherited the castle and married my mother, as often happened in those days. He wished to pledge fealty to the new king, the Welsh bastard Henry VII. I was taken along to the coronation ceremony. There I was presented to the king.
You were not, Lupin snarled. You are lying.
Well, I did see the wheels of the carriage as they rolled through the mud.
The first Tudor king, Elizabeth breathed. I can't even imagine. You saw him in person.
What are you wearing to the Mrs. Ball, darling?
Tony said affectionately as he leaned forward to touch Elizabeth's hair.
You simply must let me do your hair. Now I am wearing...
That's why he asked you,
Lupin informed Elizabeth coolly,
so that he could tell you about his own costume. It's one of his conversational specialties, a rhetorical question which turns the conversation towards oneself.
Tony glared at Lupin before dismissing him entirely with the delicate flutter of his fingers.
I shall wear a trembling conical tower of brightly colored blossoms on my head, he informed Elizabeth rapturously. Then, as I walk slowly and regally, turning my head from side to side to greet my admirers, fragrant petals will scatter in my wake.
Elizabeth buried her face in the pillow, trying not to giggle.
I understand, my love. You are overcome by the thought of it. It is rapturous, is it not?
What makes you think you're invited to the minister's ball?
Lupin said in a hateful tone. Well, the heads of departments are always invited.
Maybe not if they're on disciplinary probation.
Well, you have always attended, even whilst under disciplinary probation.
That's because he likes me.
Oh, both of you, stop it, Elizabeth said irritably. I was enjoying hearing all about the history,
she added reprovingly to Lupin.
And I was enjoying a cuddle with my wife, Lupin thought furiously, till this cowardly cunt of a vampire showed up. I'll miss you, sweet,
he murmured to Annie, kissed her cheek, and abruptly handed her to Elizabeth.
What?
She said in a startled voice when he turned away.
Can't I have a kiss goodbye?
No,
he replied and snatched up his cloak.
Not while you're fawning over your buggered-up bitch of a boyfriend.
Tony opened and closed his mouth twice, emitting little gasps of outrage.
I have never, he screeched and shook his fist threateningly. Do not believe I will not strike you.
You touch me and I'll kill you,
Lupin shot back.
Kill!
Annie hollered joyfully.
Fucky, fucky, kill, buck, cuck, cuck, kill.
Listen to her, Elizabeth hollered furiously. Listen to the things you are teaching your daughter to say.
Lupin disappeared with a bang. Elizabeth burst into tears, and Tony scuttled from the room like a terrified cockroach. When Tony burst through the door of Teddy's bedroom, he promptly tripped over a toy on the floor.
Oh my, he moaned as he sprawled awkwardly atop a pile of dinosaurs. Why cannot I not see in the dark as I'm meant to? Looses!
A nearby lantern blazed patches of yellow light across the ceiling, and Tony scrambled to his feet, hurriedly snatching items out of Teddy's dresser.
Up with you, he shrieked. We must fly! We must flee! We must away!
We cannot stay, he intoned direly and started shoving clothing into Teddy's school satchel.
Who said I'm going anywhere?
Teddy scowled and rubbed his squinting eyes.
I didn't kill that muggle.
Oh, the ungratefulness, you wretched boy! You were an accomplice, a participant! You were the cause of it all!
Teddy sighed.
Have you been drinking wine, Tony?
That is none of your concern, young man. I tell you, all is lost. We must make haste for the continent and seek asylum.
All right,
Teddy said impatiently.
I'll go with you to get asylum, Tony, but then I'm coming back home.
Well, thank you, darling. That would be lovely, Tony replied meekly. I do need your help. I haven't crossed the channel since 1500 and, well, and something. I would not know how to do it.
He shuddered violently at the thought of all that water.
I know how to do that.
Teddy yawned and clambered out of bed.
Just remember, magic does not work when you're on water. Once the water is 9/10 of a fathom deep.
Tony's demeanor changed immediately.
Well, perhaps I did not, my love. I do apologize. Heavens, if only we could apparate across.
Hardly anybody can apparate across water, Tony,
his blue-haired companion said kindly.
Or if they can, it makes them so sick they won't do it. That's why Harry rides his broom all the way to Australia.
Speaking of apparition, Teddy,
Tony shot him a reproachful glance.
Why did you pull away as I attempted to take you to my home?
Because I didn't want to end up in China, that is why,
Teddy responded with a shrug.
Or get home 3 days late. I just apparated myself home and sent Elizabeth and Al telling her you let me off here.
He finished in a pleased voice.
Well, you know that your father will find out about this underage apparition. The ministry will send him an owl. Yes, you must leave the country, my precious. He will certainly beat you.
My dad never beats me,
Tony replied indignantly.
What is wrong with you? And he used to do underage apparating, too. When he was 10, he apparated to Egypt because Grandpa John told him about that giant bookstore and a pyramid. Wherever did you end up today, Tony?
Teddy cocked his head to the side and put his chin on his hands, his face half curious and half amused, and this gesture and expression was so reminiscent of his deceased mother, Tony was momentarily startled.
Derbyshire, darling, he sighed. It was morning, and I was in a field with the most frightful cows you could imagine. I do believe they were possessed by evil spirits, he finished sadly.
It's the Devonshire cows that are demon-possessed,
Teddy said knowingly.
You must have been in Devonshire.
Oh, who can tell the difference? It was the country.
rural. Tony shuddered. Enough of all this prattle. Pip, pip, and toot, toot. Let us away. Teddy woke quickly once outside in the fresh air, and by the time Tony's blindingly bright orange carriage pulled up into the long dirt path that fronted his house, he leapt out with a squeal of joy.
Oh, do hush! You shall rouse the constable, and he will accost me with those horrid hounds of hell and place me under detention for disruption of the public peace.
Teddy stopped dancing and smiled up at him.
I'm surprised you don't get arrested for that house,
he said cheerily. The neighbors have tried, darling, Tony sniffed. This generation has not the slightest sense of style. Tony's house was what he claimed to be a stunning example of late neo-goblin Gothic, although it was actually early flamboyant hallucinogenic nightmare, a style popular with the bohemian wizards of the late 16th century. It was a very tall and very narrow edifice, with a ground floor and six upper stories containing only one room each, and leaned so sharply to the right Elizabeth refused to enter it. The polished Portland stone exterior was painted with wide vertical stripes of flaming red, shocking purple, eye-watering yellow, and vivid violet, a round black window in the center of each story like a row of buttonholes, and a crooked chimney of putrescent green brick topped off the steeply pitched roof. "Not another word, if you please," Tony declaimed, wrestling with his door key. Once inside, he rushed through the sitting room with Teddy in hot pursuit and leapt for a wrought-iron spiral staircase spray-painted in hot pink metallic glitter. When they finally reached Tony's private chambers on the fourth floor, Teddy stood and looked about with admiration as Tony hastily packed a pair of suitcases. In addition to the ostentatious empire-style bed draped in crimson velvet and the enormous lacquered purple wardrobe, the room boasted a fur-covered black chaise lounge peppered with soundly sleeping measles, a silver vanity hidden beneath piles of bejeweled hairbrushes, and a floating clothesline with a multitude of wildly colored silk stockings dripping from the ceiling. The room was in its usual state of disarray, with plumed top hats, compact mirrors, silk purses, opera tickets, theater programs, and Mongol fashion magazines littering the floor, and from the open door of the wardrobe, a cascade of lace trims and garters, feather boas, silk cravats, satin ballet slippers, and gaudy capes and breeches spilled out across the floor. The room had a certain backstage at La Cage aux Folles design, aesthetic Teddy found rather fascinating, despite the fact that it was an incredible mess.
I love this room,
Teddy shouted as he raced around a pile of feather boas and stopped to pat a dreaming Neasel.
It's so untidy and silly and girly and funny.
Tony appeared pleased with this statement. Well, you would, you know, he sighed and dropped onto a colorfully tapestried ottoman at the foot of his bed. It was your mother who helped me decorate it. What great fun we had! It was she who found this vanity at the Soho Market, and you were there as well, my precious. My, the bittersweet memories of that grand and glorious day, he sighed. It was terribly bright, however. I carried an orange silk umbrella lined with the loveliest tassels of turquoise. I do so miss that umbrella, his eyes filled with tears. The tassels were beaded with tiny, sparkling...
Tony!
Oh, yes. Sorry, darling. It was the loveliest April day one could imagine. Your mother and father packed you up with a picnic and invited me along, for we lived quite close to one another at the time. None of us dared live in wizarding London with you-know-who in control of the ministry. We had such delicious cream cakes and cherry tarts and chocolate biscuits at La Pâtisserie Valerie before strolling towards Soho Square for the market. How greatly you were admired by all that turquoise hair and those stunning blue eyes, and the lovely purple jacket your mother had knitted for you. Why, everyone stopped to admire you. Your parents were ever so proud.
Didn't the muggles think I was strange?
Teddy frowned.
A baby with blue hair?
Of course not, darling. This was Soho, Tony said dismissively. After the market closed down, we had drinks at the Gay Hussar, and I met the most divine young man. My, he had the tightest... Well, that is to say, I was simply delighted to see your parents getting on so well. Yes, they were very happy after you were born, darling. It did touch me so, he wailed and whipped out his handkerchief. It was so painful for me when they were at odds, for I loved them both dearly. And as your father discovered later, your mother's behavior could not be helped. The black women suffer most agonizingly from hormones when they are with child. It quite changes them.
"I know about hormones," Teddy piped up happily. "They made Elizabeth very silly, too. She would cry and laugh over nothing at all."
Well, the black women became violent and murderous, Tony said dourly. "But that is all in the past, my love."
"Do you ever turn out this room, Ted Tony?"
Teddy inquired as he gazed about with a rapturous expression.
"My room is never, ever like this."
"Well, not everyone is so particular about their home being in order as your father," Tony replied haughtily. "Who ever heard of a werewolf keeping such a tidy house?"
"I don't think most werewolves keep house at all," Teddy said knowingly. "Shall I get out my baby lobster? I brought him with me too."
"Well," Tony murmured weakly, "perhaps not. I mean, it is a very nice baby lobster, of course, but, well, oh dear, it is simply that whenever I see it, I remember when it was not," he shuddered.
"Oh,"
Teddy responded in a puzzled voice.
"Oh, do you mean the day it became a giant lobster and tried to do the crossword and killed you and Dad?"
"Yes," Tony replied dryly, "that would be the time."
"Dad told me that story. It was very funny," Teddy cackled. "You really are a dreadful coward, Tony. I'm saying this as your treasured friend," he added piously. "You should try and be more braver. When Dad came home from the ministry, Elizabeth said, 'I just sent you to get the pygmy pigs and look at you. Your neck is clawed and your nose is bleeding. What were you doing?' And Dad said, 'I was attacked by a herd of oversized magical creatures.' And then she said, 'Why must you always make a joke out of everything?' And then he said, 'This actually happened, and the claw marks are from Tony hanging on my neck when a rat fell on him.'"
"Well, that is simply not true," Tony replied in an offended voice. "I was not the slightest bit frightened. Your father exaggerates horribly." He snapped shut an oversized round purple suitcase. "Now, we must make haste. By daylight, your father will find you missing, and then we shall both be in great peril."
"No, we won't,"
Teddy responded in a practical voice.
"I will be in trouble. You will be in peril."
"Well, I do not request your presence," Tony wailed. "I'm simply accompanying you so that you will have an adult to look after you."
Teddy raised an eyebrow at this, but politely did not comment.
"Once we get to the continent,"
he enunciated carefully,
"where will we go?"
Oh, that. Oh, I'd not thought of it." Tony sighed and picked up the suitcases. "Well, hurry along. We must make the midnight train."
"We need to know where we're going before we get on the train,"
Tony continued obstinately.
"There is that fat French king. You could ask him about the asylum, but he doesn't really like English people."
"The French never do, darling."
"Oh no, Tony, my dad's friend is the Prince of Transylvania,"
Teddy shrieked delightedly.
"He will let you have the asylum because he and Dad are practically best mates. I heard Kingsley say so. And we can go to that castle where there are loads of dead people on spikes and at the dinner table."
"Oh, well, yes, well, that would not do at all," Tony said faintly. "You would be terribly frightened. It would be most inappropriate."
"I wouldn't be frightened at all,"
Tony hollered indignantly and stomped his foot.
"I am not frightened of anything. Anyway, maybe he's redecorated by now,"
he said sadly.
"Elizabeth redecorates every day."
Tony thought of the photograph of Radu in his cloak pocket, and a coy sort of smile slowly crossed his face.
"Perhaps we shall, darling. I do so wish to meet the prince."